The following presentation was recorded at the 2013 Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. More information at thedocforlearning.org.
Greetings. In my work, I wear many hats, and I've worn the hat of being on a board for many years, and being a minister, and also a teacher. This afternoon, I'm going to wear the hat of a teacher. And so I consider myself the teacher's advocate as we look at the topic assigned to me this afternoon. I would like to begin with a few disclaimers. First of all, this afternoon, I cannot speak for all the teachers because some of them have already told you many of the things that I may be telling you. They are the experienced teachers that you have in your classrooms, who know that the success of the school depends on an openness between staff and administration. You have them in your schools. They have learned to trust you. They have learned to confide in you, to appreciate what you have done for them. Rather, this afternoon, I would like to speak to you from the vantage point of the younger teachers. I would like to speak to you from the vantage of the new and inexperienced teachers. They may feel timid. They will be hesitant in what they ask you, especially when they are needing to ask hard questions. They will hesitate because they feel intimidated. Plus, to them, many board members are so many notches above them in age and experience. And I see some of you shaking your heads inside. You may not shake them outwardly. The reason I mention that is sometimes, you know, we also approach our teachers, and what they don't know is you might feel intimidated as well from their experience. But nevertheless, intimidation can work both ways. And so, if they were here this afternoon, some of the things that they really would want to know, but for some reason have probably never had the nerve to ask you, I'd like to look at some of those things. So what can you do that teachers will appreciate? What makes them feel trusted? What makes them feel worthwhile? That's some of the assignment that it comes to you. The second disclaimer is that these ideas are not just from my experience as a teacher. Rather, they're a compilation of many conversations that I've had with teachers in the last 30 years and in my workshop trips and school visits across the United States and Canada. The first thing I'd like to share is a no-brainer, and that is simply communication. One mistake that many board members make is telling teachers, call me anytime. You have a problem, just call me. Well, that's good. I like that availability. But do you think that's easy for a new teacher? Do you think it's easy for a new teacher to call you at any time? And when we tell them that, we say, well, you know, then we think, well, now I've done my duty. I've told them, I've given them my cell phone number, done deal. All they need to do is call me. I've fulfilled my responsibility. But put yourself into the shoes of these young teachers. They may be petrified by needing to call you, especially when you're working. You have other things needing attention. You may be a businessman, family man. And so it has to get very, very difficult for some before they'll call you. Rather, try to be proactive. Try to sense what they need, both in their physical and emotional support. Be there for them. How can you do that? And I may be speaking to the choir, but I'm going to suggest a few things that are so evident, and yet they may not be happening. One of the things that will make you or help you to sense what they may be wanting to ask is have regular staff meetings with them. Be there regularly for them. If you do have staff meetings, those of you who do, I think you will agree with me that they often come to staff meetings with a notepad and they have questions written down. Those are the things that they really want to ask you. But unless you make yourself available to them, they may not ask you as quickly as if you're right there and making yourself available. They take notes while you talk. The things that you discuss, they're there taking notes. And that proves to me that they have questions that they want answers to, and they're waiting for those answers. Secondly, on communication is follow through on decisions. And I've been guilty of this. I go and conduct a staff meeting, or our board chairman conducts a staff meeting, and they may be asking questions, and after some time, I think, oh, I never got back to them on that. So don't drop the ball. We don't realize how much they're grasping at those answers and maybe sitting on pins and needles waiting for an answer. And maybe at a board meeting we tabled the item. If an item is tabled and there's no conclusion reached, at least tell them that much. And so it's necessary for us to go back to our teachers after a staff meeting or after a board meeting and give them the answers if we have answers. And if we haven't concluded yet, at least tell them that much. Secondly, school visits. I hear from teachers, and they've told me that, I just wish you would have come more often. I wish you would be there more often. Well, again, I realize we have schedules, but there are ways in which we can do that. And again, I hear from board members in various places. I heard one last weekend in Hartwell, Georgia. He said every Monday morning, they have a board member on site at the school. And what that board member does is he goes to every classroom and just makes himself available to the teacher. You have any questions? They coordinate schedules and see how things all come together. About general or specific needs. And when that happens, we are creating a safe place, a safe environment for them to ask the hard questions. It's safe, and they will be more free to open up at that time. Again, we mistakenly think that since we carry a cell phone that we're readily available, and you may be, but how much nerve will it take them in the middle of the day to call you, to actually call you about a difficulty that they may have? Secondly, on school visits, a very important part here is, are you going into the school as an inspector or as an encourager? You see the difference? Are you going as an inspector or as an encourager? They won't tell you this, but new teachers especially don't like to be inspected. They like to be encouraged. I spend a lot of time with new teachers at our CLE teacher training, and then I tell them I'm going to come visit your school sometime, and they get terribly uptight. And I say, just relax. I'm not here to inspect. That's your school board's job. Well, now I'm telling you not to do it. But we want to come as an encourager. And so it makes a difference whether you come as an inspector or an encourager. Also, if you're going in whatever capacity, their level of relaxation will be directly proportional to the amount of times that you visit. In other words, if your visits come frequently, they'll become more comfortable. But if whenever you come, they think, what's going on now? They will be very tense. And so it depends on how frequent we are and how relaxed our visits are when we are there. And so it depends on how often we go. Drop in at school unannounced. Be an encourager. Bring a treat. Bring a milkshake from the ice cream shop, a bowl of popcorn, a plate of cookies. Food goes a long way in some of these situations. So don't be afraid to use a little food when necessary. I'd like to tell you a story. It's a true story. There was a man by the name of Dan Glick, no real close relative of mine. To those from Lancaster County, Dan Glick was instrumental in starting the Locust Grove Mennonite School back in the late 30s. And I'm told that Brother Dan Glick was on that school board for 50 years. So some of you that think you have served your term, let me know after you've reached the 50-year mark. and then we'll talk about replacement. He developed a tradition that once a year he would take soft pretzels to the school. Now, he started this when the school was small. But a number of years ago, it made the front page of the Lancaster newspaper, where he was still every year bringing soft pretzels to school. And I checked the website of the school, and currently they have like 250 students. So I'm talking a lot of soft pretzels. Dan is no longer living. I don't know if anyone picked that up or not. But it doesn't have to be soft pretzels. It can be something else. Find your niche and build on it and make that your thing. My wife usually sends a bowl of popcorn along when I go for staff meeting, and they've come to expect it. I don't know what would happen, Ken, if I'd walk in there without the bowl of popcorn. And Ken has his ways as well. So that's how it is. Thirdly, workshop attendance. Now, you're all here, so it's the ones that didn't come today that maybe should be hearing this. Don't just send your teachers to a teacher workshop. Take them. Buy their breakfast. Buy their supper on the way home, something like that. You can take off. We've heard a lot today about priorities. You can take off a day of work to come to a teacher workshop. Your business won't collapse. And so try to be there for them. And then there's financial decisions. Our teachers don't usually ask for a raise. They're very reluctant to do that. And we've maybe heard enough about that today, but I think it's worthy of repeating that they are worthy of their hire. Scripture speaks of that. Jesus said in Matthew 10:10, "For the workman is worthy of his meat." And in 1 Corinthians 9:9-10, it is written in the law of Moses, "Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn." Does God take care for oxen? Or saith he, it altogether for our sakes. For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and that he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. But what about the Levites among us? Are we taking care of the Levites, the teachers, the ones that need to feel respected, need to feel appreciated, need to be supported in their work? Again, they're not going to come and complain. I have not ever had a teacher complain to me about their salary in the staff that I've worked with. If they're complaining, they're doing it to themselves somewhere else. But they're human. They're real. They have real expectations. So make sure you're supplying that need. Another area under finances is extras, supplies, etc. I suggest you have a kitty fund somewhere that the teachers can feel free to buy the little knickknacks, the little nitty-gritties, etc., so that they don't need to come to you when they need scotch tape or something like that. Supply their needs. Be there for them in those things. And then some of us have teachers who come from outside the community, and they have an extra special set of needs that is different from those who live at home in your communities. And so we need to be there for them. And again, many of them will be very slow in coming and asking for something. Are we there for them? Are we going to be there so that they don't need to ask? Next, I'd like to suggest some personal days off, and you may have a policy on this, but I'd like for you to go outside the policy and maybe give them even an extra day sometime. If you sense one of your teachers is discouraged, and you know, we just came through February and the winter blahs, etc., and they need something, or you know that they're going to their home community for a wedding or some special occasion. School board members don't like to hear this, but I'd like to tell them that you step into the classroom. It does a lot of things. You become the substitute. Don't just find a substitute for them. You step in and walk a mile in their shoes and just replace them for a day. Give them that extra day. Say, go home to your family, enjoy yourself, come back refreshed, and it will do you good to be in the classroom that day also. A lot of newer teachers, and experienced ones as well, find discipline a continual challenge. Motivation, discipline are the two top needs that we hear about. So go out of your way in that. Make sure that you're relating to them in a timely manner. Finally, then, there's lots of other things we could cover. Are you concerned about excellence? I will just raise that question. You know, sometimes our teachers are burned out because they seem like they're pushing a rope rather than pulling along like a chain. So work with them, listen to them with both your ears and your hearts, and you will have a lot better understanding together. God bless you.
Good afternoon. It's been good to be here today. My subject is ministers, what your teachers wish you knew but probably never told you. And a lot of things I'm going to share this afternoon, we've been talking about it all day. I was ordained before I was teaching, so the whole time I was teaching, I was an ordained minister. And I didn't know how to approach this. So I sent out questionnaires to a number of different schools across the country, different fellowships, conferences, and unaffiliated groups, as well as large, medium, and small schools. And I've put a lot of these things together, tried to categorize them. A number of schools replied and said they really have nothing. Evidently, there's good communication between them and their ministers, because one of the things was that they had no complaints. Well, I wasn't really trying to get just complaints. Maybe there's something you wanted to tell them good, but everything I got through was usually on the concern side. I think this is an important subject because we have been talking about the school and the church working together. And I think it's a very, very important subject. One of the things that stood out most in the replies I got back and from my own experience is that sometimes teachers feel like they're the only one promoting the school. We just heard the school board does that, but it was the biggest thing I got back was have messages on the importance of education. Over the pulpit, one reply said at least once every 2 years. Provide your congregation with a biblical perspective on education. Don't wait until teachers' conference for people to hear why education is important. And also express or emphasize the less appreciated parts of education, such as broadening worldviews and learning to value things other than trucks and farming, and become a careful thinker. These are things that teachers want to tell their ministers. Give practical illustrations of how biblical learning can benefit the child of God. If we have a disconnect between the ministry and the school, there'll be a lot of misunderstandings. Instill a vision for the kingdom of God. If our children could only grasp the amazing blessing that their education is and the preparation that it gives them to be a great service to God's kingdom and a great destruction to Satan's kingdom, it would become a joy instead of drudgery. I was talking to Gerald here a little bit before the session started. And I'm on the Mennonite Air Missions board, and seems like we're always looking for people for the mission field. And my desire is that we, as those of us who are ministers, would see the school as a preparation for that and not wait till they're 18 or 19 years old and all of a sudden they want to go to the mission field and the basics haven't been taken care of before that. Another reply I got back was the importance of including the doctrine of repentance in the presentation of the gospel. People are led to believe that the key to salvation is asking Jesus into your heart. John the Baptist, Jesus, Peter, and Paul all taught the great need of repentance. They want to hear that from the pulpit. Show that the school is really an outreach of the church by supporting it through educational messages, affirming teachers over the pulpit, and encouraging parental support. And so not only should the school board go to bat for the school, so should the minister. Another thing about this that teachers would like to tell is that attitudes rub off on children. Children hear negative comments about the school and the subjects and bring these negative attitudes to school. Stress the need for orderliness and schedules to be a part of home life so that a child has those qualities to bring to school. After I was done studying this, I realized we ministers have a big responsibility. Another thing was under this is be sure parents have a practical understanding of the need for their children to have a good work ethic. Give parents practical ways to teach their children to work and to be personally responsible for their own motivation. We heard that this afternoon in the first address, the need for that. And you don't have to work out in public very long until you see that people don't have a good work ethic. It is disturbing when it's among our people. It doesn't have to be that way. The second point, the second category that I have, has to do about instruction class. This is children that are a little older, and they are in a stage in life where it's sometimes difficult. I remember when my girls came to the age of accountability, and the oldest one accepted Christ as her Savior, and then she began to wear a covering, and then she was disobedient, and my question was, should I whip her? Should I give her a paddling? Well, teachers have some of the same questions. Someone's in instruction class and they're disobedient. How do we handle that? Another one was, our children have lots of Bible questions but have no chance to ask them. It was stated this morning that we may be with our students 5 hours a week. It's more like 3 or 2 probably as ministers. Do we really know them? Do we really know our people? Teens go through instruction class, but yet miss so many basics. How about refresher classes? Well, this is coming from teachers. And do ministers know or care how students who are in instruction class act in school? Just one comment on the one I said before about a refresher course. I remember I went through instruction class, and a couple years later, I was wishing I would have had the opportunity to do it again, because I realized that I had missed so much. Maybe we expect parents and Bible schools and so forth to do that, but maybe we should offer that sometime. Third point, and was another big point, has to do with the submission to authority. Teachers want to ask their ministers about authority. Students seemingly do not make a connection with breaking school rules or showing disrespect in school and how this relates to submission to the authority of God. Doesn't matter if I cheat on my test. Doesn't matter if I break a rule. Another one was, do high school girls who wear the veiling really understand submission? The thought there was that they often, in that age, run over the boys. It would be good for ministers to go along on field trips. This can give a window into personal life and home life. I tell you what, you'll be blessed if you get your school board and your ministers to go along on your field trips. Maybe you don't want them along, but I think it would be wonderful. Do church leaders and parents realize the lack of submission to their authority rubs off on the children and youth of the church? This can make a teacher's job quite difficult. I don't know if you caught that, but do we as church leaders and parents realize that our lack of, we all have authority to answer to. We all need to be submissive to authority. And if we refuse that, it can have a tremendous impact in the school. Here's another one. Teachers are asked to handle situations that should be dealt with on a congregational level. The ministry does not want to cause a stir, and the teachers don't really have the authority to work on the problem. The symptoms of a problem seen in the school has roots in a problem that is outside of school authority. Example, a mom who sticks up for her child then blames the teacher for her child's disrespect. When leaders walk away from these tough situations, teachers are left without options other than to eventually quit teaching. In other words, there's some issues that we don't like to get involved in because it could cause a problem in the church. The cry is that we deal with it where it should be dealt with. Sometimes schools standards, this is in a situation where there's more than one church sending their students to the school. Sometimes school standards are higher than supporting churches. This creates an awkward situation. For school administration to uphold standards that are not appreciated in general and are not practiced by the leader's children outside of school can produce general disrespect for the school. And then another one was, do ministers really know how some parents are really like? The fourth area, the fourth category is ministers' involvement and interest in the school. I was planning on taking Brother Elmer's workshop, and I ended up I went to the wrong workshop. And then when I was in there, I just stayed. So if I'm repeating what you said, I'm sorry, but this is what the cry from the teachers is. Ministers should show interest in what the children and teachers are interested in. It is encouragement when ministers come to school for devotions and then stay to visit and interact with the students. It is important that the students realize ministers are interested in their relationship with Jesus Christ and how life is going for them. It can help attitudes toward education, especially among the older boys, if the men who preach to them on Sunday also take an interest in their education. The one reply said that the uppity-up men who speak to them on Sunday are really interested in them. And I don't consider myself that, but maybe that's the way we appear sometimes. We can be intimidating to little children. Somehow we got to get that across that we are interested in them. Another one is, it can seem like some ministers are looking for a man to head up the school, define its mission, create a good school culture, etc. While some of this is understandable, it is important for the ministry to try to understand how the school works. It can be dangerous and unhealthy for too much to be on one man. When he leaves, no one really knows how to proceed. Leaders who never taught can feel intimidated by those with experience, but it is appreciated when effort is made to connect deeply with the school. I'd echo what Brother Elmer said about the school board. Ministers should visit enough that you don't feel uneasy when they come. And I'm tramping on my own toes right now. Ministers should consider ways to get the entire congregation involved in the work of the school. Suggestion was having the same memory work as what the students do. The fifth category that was a cry is something we did hear today. And it's important that Christian education is given its rightful place in building the church and the kingdom of God. Sometimes the thinking is that Christian education must prove itself worthy. It is guilty until proven innocent. Sometimes it takes years to prove what a blessing a good Christian education can be. For someone who is skeptical, you can't prove it. And then also, Mennonites are frugal and want the most for their money, except when it comes to education. They seem to want to get as little value as they can. Parents remove their children from school easily. They need to be encouraged to value education. It was mentioned earlier sometime today about do we have schools just to fulfill a requirement? I don't know what your requirements are, but why is it that we have in Pennsylvania 180 days and we work at any way we can to pare that down? This will count for a day and that'll count for a day. Why don't we go a couple of days over? Did you ever think about it? We do just the bare minimum. Why is that? Just a couple more things. Misplaced values. Do ministers realize how focused many students are on professional sports teams and players? Are we aware of that? Teachers want to know. Do ministers know who are the heroes of our school students? And there's only one way we'll find out, is that's spend time with them. And then the role of the school, make sure that the parents understand that the school is not there to train their children. The school is not meant to supplant the parents' role and responsibility in any way. The school is there to supplement existing training, and you can't supplement what is not there. Just some concluding thoughts. Teachers must be open to hear from ministers. Ministers come in and visit, and they must be open to have them involved in school. Ministers should not feel intimidated by teachers. Someone actually told me this today, and as I studied it, I realized that it's true. It was true in my case. Ministers who had taught and now have put the school in someone else's hands but continue to be involved, they need to continue to be involved but not overly controlling. I taught for 7 years, and then as high school teacher and principal, and then Brother Sheldon Yoder came in and took my place, and I was going in for 2 years teaching Spanish a couple days a week. And I purposely tried to not be there very much because I didn't want to cause him a problem. I wanted him to do his program. As I look back, I probably withdrew myself too much. As I studied for this, I realized I don't know a lot what's going on. So we as ministers, if we're going to know our people, we should know the school, the teachers, and the students.
I just wanted to say at the outset here that I really do appreciate the work of the committee and the hosting community here. It has been a blessing to be here, and I thank you for all the work that I know that means for you. It has been a real joy to be talking shop all day long with board members and principals and teachers. I feel grateful. Like in most occupations and areas in life, we probably have those moments in which we have things we wish we could say but don't really have a chance to say them. So, you know, this might be dangerous. I don't know. Maybe it's us getting on our soapboxes as teachers and educators. I don't know. So what I have to say here, I want to say with love and affection. I've taught enough years now that I don't get all wound up and out of shape. I get wound up maybe, but not bent out of shape by some of the things I'm going to be saying here in terms of parents. So I'm in the process of parenting 5 children, and I know how hard it is to be the parent. And so just take what I say with a grain of salt, and maybe you'll have a few ideas, though, from a teacher's perspective. And while I do this, I wouldn't mind having a little bit of fun with it occasionally, if you don't mind. What's your teachers wish parents knew but probably never told you? First of all, complaining about the cost of the school makes us wonder if we are worth the cost to the church. We're not quite sure what to do about that, actually.
because we know that most of the money in the budget is going into our back pockets. And so when we hear lots of that, we're not sure what to say about that. Then kind of to top it off, I tend to be kind of straightforward. To top it off, and then we drive in the school lot with really nice vehicles that we'll never be able to afford. And then we kind of wonder about the priorities. These are things teachers would never tell you, I promise. Second of all, teachers want you to know that teaching is a real job. One morning, a brother came by school, and he stopped by at 7:30 in the morning. And he said, he let himself in the school and said, "Oh, you're here already." And I thought to myself, "Well, yeah, I'm here. I've been here for an hour and a half now." But I said, "Yes, I am." I said, "Does that surprise you?" "Oh," I said, "well, I guess it does." I said, "Well, what time do you think I get in?" "Well," he said, "school starts at 8:30, so what, about 8:15? I said, "Well, a little before that probably. What time do you think I go home?" "Well, I would guess it's banker's hours," he said, in all seriousness. And I said, "Well, brother, when do you expect me to get ready for next day's classes?" "Well," he said, "you know, I never thought of that." So teaching is a real job. Our job is not 8 to 5, actually. And we get really, for considering that it's not a real job, we get really tired at the end of the day. We find it demanding because of the intensity of relationships. Now, by the way, I would encourage you, if you'd happen to know my mother, don't talk about teaching not being a real job. She has birthed 4 teachers who are currently teaching, and she knows something about that. She is a very gentle person. Do not say that around her, or you'll get an earful. So it might not be a real job, but let me remind you, too, that we will freely admit that we lose our calluses during the school year. And yes, we feel like wimps sometimes. No, we can't take a bundle of shingles up like we maybe can after we've had a few weeks in the summer to get strength back. But teaching's a real job. We'd like for parents to know that we secretly like and appreciate snacks after school occasionally. It means a lot to be remembered, and it helps us to be a team as we stand around and drink a Diet Coke or munch on a cookie. There's something good about that, and we feel remembered, cared for, and appreciated when parents do that on their own volition. We crave your involvement in your child's education. We crave it. We really want it. You know, it's pretty lonely sometimes, and as teachers we wonder, are we making a difference? We often struggle there. But when you talk with us and you volunteer in the school and you drop by to visit, we know you care about your child, and then we know you care about what we do too. Teachers are normal people. Well, mostly. I'm a teacher, so I can say that. I don't know if we're normal or not. I think we are. And so talk to us and foster a relationship with us. It's sometimes awkward to know what to talk about and what not to talk about at church, because we're not sure, should we be talking about your children? You're not sure if you should talk about your children to me, and we're not sure where work and church and Sabbath and all this comes together, and we're not always quite certain how to approach all of this. There aren't many of us in your congregation. So we're the minority, and sometimes we struggle to know where the common ground is. We don't often get to talk shop, as there are not very many people in our church that are teaching, correct? And so we miss that talking shop, and look for ways to talk shop with other teachers, just like you dairymen and business owners like to talk shop with each other about your businesses. However, we really do enjoy and have a need to be involved in your world, to understand your world. And so we want you to see us as normal human beings to have a relationship with. We have our own issues. We want you to know that don't believe quite everything you hear from your children, if you would. If you don't, you know, the saying is, you know, if you don't believe everything you hear about me, I don't believe everything I hear about you. There is actually a thread of truth in that. And so there's often two sides to a story. And we appreciate when you take the time to figure out what the other side is before you take sides. Now, we do try to give parents the benefit of the doubt. We always appreciate it when you give us the same benefit of the doubt. You see, when your children says, "Oh, I never get breakfast," we actually don't think that they never get breakfast. What they meant was they don't get Cheerios or their favorite breakfast every morning, you know? And so that mutual giving the benefit of the doubt, I think, is helpful. We don't enjoy talking about sensitive matters with your children right around you. It's far more comfortable if you send them off. When we as a teacher talking with you as a parent, your children right around there, then we don't know who's quite in charge right then. We don't really want your child there while we talk about whatever concern you had about the classroom. We want to hear the concern, but we're not sure it's good for the child to hear your concern in our presence and what that means. And so we don't know now who's in charge. Are you or me in charge? And so now I'm uncertain what to say, and then I'm going to look evasive, and you're going to wonder, what is wrong with this teacher? There must be a problem here. But that's mostly because we don't know what to say. And what we should have done is we should have said, "You know, Jill and Jack, could you go play over there?" But we hate to do that because they're your child. We find that some children know too much about some things. Back up the teacher. You know, it's easiest to train your children, to train children when you let your children know that the teacher is right. Even when we're wrong, back up the teacher if you would, please. We'll come back and we'll tell you that we're wrong. Or if a teacher doesn't and there is something wrong, then the board needs to take some action. So that's for you, board, that you go right ahead. Okay, that's an issue. But we don't mind being told that, you know, are you sure you handled that right? But your children come home and say, "Oh, today Mr. Miller did this and it's not fair." "You mean he did that? I can't believe it. I'm going to give him a call right now." And then you give me a call while I hear your dear child in the background. My heart sinks. I've lost part of my battle already. And I might have made a mistake. I just might have. I probably did. But if you can back us up, we'll back you up. Actually, we'll back you up anyway, okay? That's how it works. We wish your church wouldn't ordain our male colleagues. You know, we actually feel like we need male teachers in our schools. And the last year, I have fairly close acquaintance with three that have become ordained. And I bless and applaud the ministers and leadership in the church. I wonder sometimes if we had carefully considered the role of teachers and whether the giftings of teaching should be considered as parents think about the lot in the church. I will have to admit in my weaker moments that I find myself tempted to pray that the good men in leadership in our schools won't get ordained, because over and over I hear, "I have to choose now." I'm not saying it has to be that way, but I'd encourage our churches to think about that. One brother told me we should just ordain teachers. Well, that would probably maybe be okay. I don't know, but I'm not calling for that. I'm saying be sensitive to what you want in the school long term. Don't take vacations during the school year. That's what teachers want to tell parents sometimes. It deeply affects school culture, the classroom. It's lots of work to get. You know, when I had a student going to one of the beaches off of North Carolina, beginning of school year, and we're working our tails off to pull together everything for them to go, and then they missed all the class discussions, and everyone's thinking about, while we're sitting here in school, so-and-so is over there, you know, sunning themselves. And we have to write a paper, an essay. It's really, it puts a damper in the classroom. And then when you get back, we have to grade all that stuff. And so we spend a lot of extra time when you take off. And so it's hard while you're taking vacations for us to feel really good about that. If you want to make a teacher happy with it, give them a $50 bill when you took off a week. Allow for adequate sleep on the weekends. I'm a firm believer that Garfield has messed up American culture. Because if you know anything about Garfield, heard of Garfield, the comic strip, he always hates Mondays, thinks Mondays are bad. I think Mondays are the best day of the week. And I make sure my students know that. You've got the weekend to revitalize, get back on track, and now we're ready to go. Instead, they come in dragging their tails. What time did you get to bed last night? Oh, I don't know, 11:30, 12 o'clock. Well, it's very hard to make things work in the classroom when they don't get sleep, and the weekends can be the worst for that. If you were to get your beautiful cherubs in bed by 9:30 on Sunday night, you would make teachers very happy. Nutrition matters. When they give your first grader a snack, it's preferable to do carrot sticks. They'd rather have Twinkies. But feeding them sugar doesn't seem to do the same thing in the classroom as feeding them carrots. It doesn't hurt if they eat breakfast before they come as well. When they're starving at 9 o'clock, we've got a long morning ahead of us. Don't do your child's homework for them. Don't tell them the answer. The homework is given not to terrorize families and make it difficult to enjoy family life. Maybe it's okay to check in. Why do you have the homework? Oh, I don't know. I just got a lot of homework today. Well, as a parent, if you were to say, well, did you make good use of your time today? Oh, well, yeah. Well, why have you had homework the last three nights that took 2 hours a night? Oh, I don't know. We're just getting loaded right now. Mr. Teacher, we're wondering if our son actually has a lot of homework because there's a lot of homework that needs to happen or because he's not making good use of his time. And you'd be surprised what your teachers might tell you in those situations. So, but don't do your child's homework for them. Create space for it. We're not doing it to be nasty. We're trying to make sure that learning happens. Talk with your children at home about school. Are you tuned in? Do you ask questions? Who are your children's friends? What book are you reading for story time? What did you play today? Those are all great questions. We tend to ask general questions. How was your day? And they say, fine. And that's not what I'm talking about, actually. Ask the specific questions. The attitude of the parent really affects children in our classroom. Are you aware of how much influence you have on your children? If you think that school is a necessary evil, have you thought about how that impacts your children when they walk in through those doors every morning? If you as a parent offer your child a truck to drop out of school, have you thought about the statement you've made as a parent? What's really important? For a child to engage in 8, 10, or 12 years of education while doing something that is a necessary evil is very damaging to the soul of a child, and teachers feel that. They wonder, how do you motivate a student when dad says, "It's the most ridiculous. I never had to do English when I was growing up, or at least not that much, or not that kind, and algebra? My grandpa died of that." You know, those kinds of comments are not particularly helpful as we try to educate your children. And lastly, teaching is an unspeakable joy for those called to it.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.